magical place we could go. So close your eyes and make a wish for the skies with the angriest, flappiest birds, and the seas with ridiculous fish. The Dutch Arcade Show is here again. It's Friday night and I'm with my friends, Eli, Jared, and Mike most of the time. Mike, come on, let's go to the Dutch Arcade Show.
Hey guys, what is up, and welcome to the Touch Arcade Show, episode number 405, recording live on Friday, June 28th. I am Jared, and with me is Eli.
Hello.
We are the hosts of this awesome podcast, and in case you didn't know, which you probably should be knowing if you're listening to this right now, Touch Arcade is the number one source for mobile gaming news, reviews, all that good stuff, as well as lots of Nintendo Switch coverage, which seems to be pretty popular lately. We've gotten some good compliments on our Switch stuff. So yeah,
Switch is on really fire exciting. With good games lately. It's crazy.
Yeah.
This week's podcast is sponsored too, right?
Oh yeah. And this week, our lovely podcast is sponsored by Armor Games for, wow, the fifth week in a row. Although this week it is for their newer release, which is Void Tyrant. And I actually have that in our list of news items to talk about, so we can talk about the game a little bit there. And then I'll have some awesome radio commercial copy to read about halfway through the show there. Just want to remind you that Touch Arcade is primarily supported through our readers and our listeners. So if you like what we do, you can visit us at patreon.com/TouchArcade and consider donating even as little as a dollar, which can get you some cool benefits like a video version of this podcast as well as some other stuff. And additionally, you can help us out by doing your Amazon shopping through TouchArcade.com/Amazon. And we'll get a little tiny slice of anything that you might be buying through Amazon anyway.
Hell yeah. And
yeah, with all that stuff out of the way, should we kick into some off-topic discussion? You got anything you want to talk about?
I've been riding the boosted board.
How's
quite
that going?
A bit. I went on my most ambitious ride yet. Ooh. To the gym. It was cool. The problem is, like, so I live next to a river, and there's obviously, like, any town that's on a river, there's only a few bridges that go across it, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, all the roads, like, so I start, like, in a neighborhood where there's, like, almost no cars on the street ever that I can buzz around, you know, it's very flat, no big deal. And then, like, as you get closer to the river, it starts to slope really hard, and, like, naturally all the traffic just collects, like, towards the bridge, so the streets just get busier and busier.
Yeah.
So the road that I would take to, like, normally skateboard to the gym or, like, bike or something like that is, like, busier and steeper than I'd ever be comfortable, like, skateboarding down, like, with a normal skateboard.
Yeah.
Because, like, I don't know, you just had to walk, basically. You just, like,
Unless
you had the room to, which I'm not even good enough to do this, but, like, where you, like, kind of go slide sideways to sort of, like, you know, slide.
Yeah,
break,
slow
you
yourself
know?
Down. Yeah, right.
Yeah, I grew up in the Midwest, you know, so I never really had an option to kind of, like,
learn
that, you know. So I took the boosted board to the gym down this hill, and it was actually worked surprisingly well because you can just kind of, like, engage the brakes and, like, really slow yourself down and just, like, go, like, a normal speed down the hill. But,
really?
Like, understandably, like, people in the suburbs, like, have zero patience for some dickhead on a skateboard riding down the road, you know, so that was kind of challenging, but I could do it. It's just, I don't know, not very fun on busy streets with people that aren't used to you not being in a car, I guess.
Yeah.
Like, if
you
had more bike lanes or something, that would be way better, but I don't know. So far, it's just, it's really good for, like, just cruising around the neighborhood and, like, going to the different clubs I'm a member of and stuff like that, but not dealing with traffic, I guess.
Yeah.
But
yeah, that's cool. I feel like even just getting to your Phoenix Club, like, that's a decent little walk. It's what, like, 10 or 15 minute walk or something like that?
Yeah,
so
I can do it like five.
Cut that in more than half, I'm sure, with your skateboard. So that's cool.
Yeah. So Boosted also, they just released a scooter that I wish I could rationalize buying. It's $1,600. But it's like top of the line, like dual motors, like Tesla grade, like car batteries.
Wow.
Instead of, like, the, because that's always, like, the rub with these cheaper electric gizmos, mm-hmm. is that, like, batteries are expensive, so they cut costs by, like, getting the, like, jankiest no-name Chinese batteries, which inevitably, like, swell and explode and all this stuff,
which you don't want.
Yeah, that's very bad. But the Boosted one has, like, real high quality batteries. It's, like, totally sealed, so it's completely waterproof. You can ride in the rain and all this stuff, and
that's
I'm just like, man, that's so cool. I just wish I had like anywhere to ride it that would make any sense.
Yeah, I don't like that you're talking about this, because I'm like trying to rationalize getting a scooter, because I actually just walked to meet some friends at a brewery that's like not super far. It's like a 30-minute walk. You know, it's decent. But I mean, like, man, I'd be there in just a few minutes if I had a little electric scooter. I almost jump biked it there, but it's kind of like the kind of distance where you feel silly getting on a jump bike just to ride for like 3 minutes and then you're there.
Yeah.
I just kind of walk the whole thing. But I don't know if I had my own scooter.
Well, so you can buy the same scooter that is used by like Bird and all those other ones for $400 on Amazon.
Oh, really?
Like the same scooter.
Like they sell their old ones, or like
it's
same brand?
It's this Chinese company called Xiaomi, Xiaomi.
Oh, the place that makes phones too.
I guess, I don't know, but yeah, they make phones. But yeah, like that's the one that everyone says to get. Like if you just want a scooter to like dick around on.
Yeah.
But you know, it only has an 18-mile range. It only goes 15 miles an hour, but. Mm. I don't know.
I'm gonna have to look into that.
Versus $1,600 for the boosted one. Like, I don't think it's four times as good.
Well, that's, you can just buy a car. Or
yeah, exactly. Like, but yeah, no. So, if there was a good reason for me to have one of these, like, I love those scooter rentals so much. Yeah. It's so much fun.
Yeah.
I don't know, but.
No, I agree. But I am going to look into that, because that would be pretty handy. I have a couple friends that are nearby, but not, you know, it'd be nice to get there a little quicker than walking takes me. And I don't always feel like busting out my bike. So
I'll text it to you right now. That's the one to get. I'll also drop the link in the show notes, too, if people are curious about this particular scooter.
Yeah, if you buy one, podcast@tetrak.com, send us an email, because I would like to hear about that.
But yeah.
So I have some off-topic discussion to go on today, because I just went on a headphone journey.
Oh yeah.
I don't know if you can tell I'm wearing new headphones, but like you ever get a haircut and then you're like looking at your head and you're like, it's too skinny, or it looks weird, or whatever. Like I feel like I look weird without like my cans on. But sadly my Sony over ear headphones, which I've come to find are actually like crazy popular DJ headphones from back in the day, and they sell on eBay now. I think I paid $100 for them, and they sell for over $100 on eBay.
Oh wow.
So sadly, like, my plastic parts are kind of cracking, and it's sort of like on the verge of just falling apart, but I still might try and put them up on eBay, because the actual headphones are still good, and maybe somebody out there really wants them. But
yeah, it's weird how Sony's like I've stumbled across this too, with like weird niche like electronic stuff that like, yeah, we're like the best at that price point, and then whatever company just like stopped making it.
Yeah.
Which it seems silly to me.
No, I agree. And yeah, I would have never really known. I just figure when I bought them at the time, it wasn't like I put a lot of thought into it. It was like, you know, I was buying a CD player and I saw these on display and was like, having cool headphones would be fun. And just kind of impulse bought them back in like 2000, 2001. So they're almost two decades old. But, yeah, you know, I didn't put a whole lot of thought into it or whatever. But then I come to find that, these are like super sought after, because they don't make them anymore. And they were like apparently a really popular DJ headphone. And so, I don't know, rest in peace that they don't really, they're falling apart a little bit, but they also would always hurt my ears. So my journey for new headphones was kind of based around like what's comfortable and what can you wear for like a long time. Mm-hmm. But then I got kind of like, I came across these are like these little Sennheiser headphones. And the funny thing is, these are like designed specifically for like museums to buy for like audio tours and stuff like that.
They look like the kind that would just like come with a Sony Walkman.
Yeah, totally. Right. And so that, you know, they I got turned on to these because it was like, it's supposed to be tuned for like voice, like to have like a audio tour talking in your ear. It's not necessarily for like music or whatever. And so I was like, well, that sounds like something that it would be good for a podcast where you're just talking the whole time.
Yeah, sure.
And they were like, you know, super cheap. And so I was like, I'm going to try those out. And so the funny thing though is because they are designed for that, almost everywhere that sells them in packs of 25. and for like $500. And so I couldn't find anywhere that would sell singles until I happened across this weird like photo store in New York that sold them singles for $20 and did the free shipping thing. So it took like a bajillion years to get here. And so in the meantime, my further research into this in terms of like comfort and ones that you can wear for long periods of time, I came across the Cost Porter Pros, which I had actually known about. And they are funny because they are actually released in 1984 and they haven't stopped making them. They haven't really changed the design since then.
Like Koss, K-O-S-S, like the old school like tape brand? Wow.
And so this is like its folded up form because one of their coolest features is they fold up and then they hook into like a tight little ball that's like basically the size of a baseball. But then you unhook them and then you fold them out and then they're like normal headphones. But you can see like their design, like these are old school.
Yes.
These look like 80s headphones.
If those headphones were made today, they would have like fancy magnets that like hold them together and stuff, not a weird plastic hook.
Probably. But they are so, committed to not changing the design is that they came out with a Bluetooth version last year, and rather than find a way to work the battery and stuff into like these headpieces that are already there, they just attached like dongles to where the cords normally would be, and so it's like a wireless Bluetooth version, but it still has like the over your neck cord or whatever.
So they're called Cost Porter Pros.
Cost Porter Pros, and like most people would probably recognize them. I've come to learn that they are like pretty legendary for how good they sound for the price and the size, and that's part of the reason I think they've been unchanged for over 30 years or whatever.
$50.
Yeah, and so when the Bluetooth ones came out last year, I was kind of reading about them. I was like, I think those look cool, and they are supposed to sound really good, and I kind of wanted a pair, but I never got one. And so when my headphone search came around, these came up as one of the more comfortable ones because they have like these cool adjustments that can kind of like
there's take also
ears or whatever.
Looks like a slider for the comfort zone. What does that
do? The comfort zone can take the pressures off your ear. And so lo and behold, I get them and I've been comparing the two because I'd already ordered these. And then I came across these and was like, well, crap, I just bought headphones. But they were on Mass Drop. And pretty
I think
cheap.
You mean
and
drop.com now.
Drop.com. And they're cheaper than you can get them on Amazon and stuff like that. And so I was like, oh, well, screw it. I'm just going to get both. And I'll have a shootout and see which headphones I end up with. But so the legend is true though. Like I got these and I was like, well, I want to hear how good these sound, the Porter Pros, and plugged them in, listened to music, and like probably for like the next 2 hours, I was just like listening to different songs, being like, oh my god, these sound amazing.
Looks like they're like the wireless ones are $80 on Amazon. Looks like
yeah,
Porter Pros.
I don't know. I'm not really. I've heard some things that it has a different amp in it too, so they sound a little bit different. So I'm just rocking these wired ones and we'll see what happens. But I love how they fold up and they are super comfortable. And so this week I'm going to try the Sennheiser, see how they go. Next week I'm going to try the Porter Pros. And at least for podcasting purposes, I'm not sure. I'm going to go with whichever one doesn't hurt my ears by the time we're done recording. Because my Sony cans would, my ears would hurt sometimes for the rest of the day. So it's something that I can wear for more than an hour without
yeah, this is cool. So I'm actually in the, I think we mentioned this, so I'm in the market for new headphones because my fucking Beats are like laughably broken.
Right.
Yeah. And I actually was like complaining about that on Twitter, and the amount of people that are like, oh yeah, dude, I spent $350 on like a pair of Beats Studios and they broke in a year, and Apple told me to go piss up a tree when I went back and was like, hey, my headphone snapped.
Right. So that's speaking of cost, so I kind of did what I think you did where you're like, cost, that's like the generic
I never would have looked at that
generic brand of CD player you'd buy at like Rite Aid or something. That's technically true because but that's only because cost, who is actually like a majorly respected in the world of headphones and music stuff, they license out their name to some other company to make like General Electronics with the Cost name on them.
That makes sense.
And they made really shitty electronics. Cause I know when I was a kid, I had like a Cost Discman or even Walkman or something.
Yeah.
And, or no, I think it was a boombox actually. And it was just crap. And so, I feel it's kind of unfortunate they sullied their name like that, but Cost in general dates back to the '50s and they actually invented like stereo headphones or whatever, as we know them today. So, their history is actually really interesting, but, Yeah, so these are kind of like their headphones that they're most well known for, but all their headphones, minus anything that's Bluetooth, because they can't really offer it on stuff that's got a Bluetooth radio in it, but all their wired headphones have a lifetime warranty. Like, no questions asked. You just send them in if anything happens.
Oh, really?
And I think you pay shipping. It's like $9, and then they'll send you a new pair. Yeah,
which probably covers the cost of the headphones, honestly.
Yeah, probably. But I know a lot of people are talking about the Porter Pros, and they're like, yeah, I'm on, like, I bought a pair in the 80s, and I'm on, like, the sixth, like, 6 degrees of that original version that I've gotten through warranty.
Yeah, that's bonkers.
Yeah, so it's like connected to the ones I bought like 30 years ago or whatever. And so, yeah, their lifetime warranty is pretty great too. So, but anyway, so we'll see how it goes. But I can definitely, if you wanted, I think the only drawback to these for
which is Sennheiser's?
What's that?
The Sennheiser's or the cost? The Sennheiser's ones?
And the Porter Pros. I think the biggest drawback is they're on-ear open back, and so there's sound leakage.
Yeah.
And so I was kind of worried about that, but I don't think my voice is leaking through my headphones into my mic or anything like that. But if you're on like a plane or something like that, you're not going to be able to drown out noise, and people are going to hear your stuff you're listening to depending on how loud it is.
Yeah, see, that's my problem. I primarily wear my headphones at the gym, and like for whatever fucking reason, they need to play like the worst radio station at like the highest volume imaginable. So when you try to like watch a movie or something, it's like I don't even know, bad no, songs.
I mostly envision me wearing these, like, if I was going to go on a bike ride or something like that, I wouldn't want to have my AirPods in because they're still not as secure as I want them to be. I noticed that when I rode the train to San Jose for WWDC, and I just had my AirPods and listening to music the whole time, and it felt like I was just constantly making sure they weren't falling out because they felt like they're on the verge of falling out constantly. So
yeah, but you have weird ears.
But anyway, yeah, super cool little headphones, both these pairs, actually. These so far are pretty comfortable and they sound all right, but nothing like the Porter Pros. Like the sound on those just blew me away. So
I'll have to check that out.
Anyway, I'll check in next week with how things are going. Next week will be the Porter Pro and we'll see who wins.
The headphone shootout.
World of headphones. So with that out of the way, I guess we can talk about mobile gaming because that's what this is all about, isn't it?
Hell yeah.
So I guess we can work, this is, we'll go most recent to last week's stuff, but,
which one is that, the story I'm on now or the opposite direction?
Yeah, the story you're on now is, okay, cool. Is from today. So network with, the E as a three is a company formed by Neil Young, formerly of NGMoco from back in the day. And they formed this company in like 2015. And I think they've really only released like a chat platform, and then they've released like a free-to-play action RPG called Legendary Heroes or Legendary something. But anyway, it's like for being a company for 4 years, it's not like I've really heard a whole lot of noise from them or whatever.
Yeah.
Apparently, they just inked a deal with the Tetris company to work on multiple Tetris games built for mobile. And the first one of those is going to be called Tetris Royale, which is a battle royale Tetris.
I'm very curious to see how this differs from, what is this, which one? Tetris 99, yeah.
I feel like it's not going to differ a whole lot. But the funny thing is, so like Tetris 99 is like you have this kind of long vertical Tetris screen, and then you have all the other players like on the screen surrounding you. So you can like kind of see what's going on with the other players. You can notice who's getting knocked out or who has a lot of blocks filled up or whatever.
That's
to try and go after those people.
Mostly unnecessary information though. I guess you're really good.
You can just focus on yourself. But I mean, if you're a like high level play, you notice those things, you change who you're targeting and stuff like that, which I am not a high level player. But so I don't see how you're going to be able to have that on like your phone. But I think just in general, playing on your phone and there's other people playing at the same time, and then you there's a counter that tells you who's getting knocked out and who's not or whatever. Yeah. I feel like that would be fine.
I guess you really could. I mean, when you think about it, like the Tetris play area, well, I guess it depends if it's going to be in portrait or landscape mode. If it's in portrait mode, it'd probably take up the whole screen, but landscape mode,
portrait mode.
Yeah.
But anyway, Tetris Royale, 100-player Tetris, and then it will also have what they're calling daily activities that will feature thousands of players. And then they'll have the regular old marathon mode for like solo play. So you can just kind of play Tetris, see how far you can get or whatever. This game is going to go into soft launch sometime this year with no global release date yet. So it may come this year, probably more likely sometime next year.
Yeah, if this sounds interesting though, and you have a Switch, I would definitely check out Tetris 99. It's probably like my favorite iteration of Tetris.
It's super fun. Right, it's very exciting to play against other people and do well, and let alone like win occasionally. And that's like, you know, awesome. So yeah, Tetris 99 is super fun. If they can translate that type of experience to mobile, I'm all on board. Remains to be seen.
Yeah, only thing with Tetris 99 on the Switch is it requires Nintendo Online, but in my opinion, I think I mentioned this when we talked about it the first time, like I would just consider that a $10 game because it's totally worth $10.
There's a paid DLC for Tetris 99 now that comes with a bunch of stuff that you can play offline. Yeah, but not, you can't play the Royale mode or whatever without a Switch Online, I don't think. But yeah, there's like paid DLC. People freaked out about it when it came out.
The game was free, though.
It was free, and it still can be free. You don't need the stuff that they released for money. But yeah, people were mad anyway, so whatever. Tetris Royale, keep an eye on it. And, you know, I wonder what other Tetris stuff they have. It's a multi-game, multi-year deal, so lots of mobile Tetris coming our way. And I guess that means EA is not in the Tetris game anymore. They were kind of, they had the rights to the mobile version for a long time, if I remember right.
So. Might be sub-licensed from them, who knows?
Yeah, I don't know. So,
$10, big block DLC. Huh.
Yeah.
That's cool. I don't have a problem with that.
You're a little late, but you can get mad that there's paid DLC
I am mad. Consider me angry.
So this is the Harry Potter Wizards Unite, which is the Pokemon Go Harry Potter version.
Did you fiddle with this yet?
No, I still haven't played it, but this launched last week. I think we talked about it a little bit on last week's show. They already have their first planned, basically the Pokemon Go Fest, but for this game, which is taking place in Indianapolis on Labor Day weekend. And so if you're one of those that's super into Harry Potter and you want to go check out this game and play it with other people in a big setting at a big festival type thing, you can get tickets to this. But more than anything, I just want to, I'm morbidly curious to see if it's going to be a disaster like the first Pokemon Go Fest or.
I don't know. I would think they've had that figured out by now, but.
You would think that, right? But then you went to the next one that was fixed that was admittedly better, but not as fun.
Mm-hmm. I'm
curious if they're going to find the sweet spot between a technically sound event and one that's still like engaging and fun to be at.
I don't know. It seems to me like the whole theme of this is like, oh, all right, we identified all our fuck ups with Pokemon Go. Let's start over with something really good. Yeah. So
no, I kind of agree with that. So maybe it'll be true of their festivals too.
It's interesting they chose Indianapolis as the location for that. Like, Chicago, it's always surprised me that more stuff's not in Chicago because, like, it's in the center of the country. We have O'Hare, and, like, you can fly from basically anywhere and get to Chicago in one stop.
Oh, yeah. O'Hare's, like, one of the biggest hubs.
Yeah, it's like flying to Atlanta. Like, you can pretty much fly, you know, because, like, Atlanta has, what, Delta or whatever. So if you're flying, like, Delta, you can always get to Atlanta in one stop. Right. Or whatever airline. It might be American. I don't remember. But, so Chicago like made a lot of sense to me because like you fly into O'Hare, you take the, I think it's the Blue Line train down and you're just like at the event.
Yeah.
You know? So that seems pretty cool as opposed to like if you're on the East Coast or West Coast, like that's a long flight for half the country.
Yeah.
Indianapolis seems like a weird one to me because
I thought so too. It sounds like they have like a really, it's in some sort of river park or something like that. So maybe it's just strictly about the actual venue itself or something like that.
I mean, it's hard
seem like a weird city because if you were coming from out of town, far out of town, you'd probably fly into Chicago, right? And like transport to Indianapolis or have to take
you'd probably have a layover in O'Hare or Atlanta.
Yeah.
That seems really weird. I mean, because like it's a pretty long drive from Chicago. Yeah. Like is it really? It's a thing.
I know you're near Indiana, but not necessarily Indianapolis.
Yeah, Indianapolis is kind of like in the center of the state. So for me, it would probably take like, let's see, I'll bring it up right now. So it's 178 miles away, about 4 hours without traffic.
Yeah,
so
that's just kind of a strike.
Yeah. They do have Waffle House there, though. So that's That's a big
Worth the drive then.
plus for Indianapolis, but yeah, I don't
I still
know.
think you should become the kingpin of Waffle House in the Chicago area, even if you have to open nine
I
of them.
totally agree. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I've been to Indianapolis a bunch because it's like not super far, you know, and like it's not one of those cities that if someone asks you like, oh, what's your favorite thing about Indianapolis? I wouldn't be like, oh man, they have world-class parks. If I was going to hold an event, it would be in Indianapolis, you know, like everywhere has good parks. Like that's a thing that cities rightly spend money on, you know, so.
Yeah, I'd be curious to know what the story is behind that on choosing Indianapolis, but we'll see. So Labor Day weekend, this thing's taking place, and I'm going to watch it with curiosity to see if it's a disaster and also to see if people actually show up for it. You know what I mean? How popular is this Harry Potter game? It's not Pokemon Go levels, at least that I've seen, but, you know, is it doing well enough to have a big festival? So
it also seems kind of soon, right? I mean, like, that's only in a couple months.
Real soon. Very interesting. But I think they're thinking, like, oh, the height of the summer and everyone will be playing it. Like, that one year everyone played Pokemon Go.
Yes.
So we'll
I don't know. I'm cautiously optimistic. I don't want to, like, dump on this game, but it just seems fast.
It seems to be people are liking it and stuff like that, but it's not at the levels of Pokemon Go. So I don't know.
Because like the Pokemon Festival like felt like a really cool, like, oh my God, like everyone's so into this. Like they really want a big event where everyone can play together because we've got like these raids now and like super fun with a lot of people. So like let's do this thing that the community is like really begging for.
Right.
And this is like, hey, we launched this 2 weeks ago. We're going to do an event in Indianapolis.
I kind of agree. It's strange. So
I don't know.
So moving on, this is actually kind of related to the Tetris Royale story. Flappy Royale is a 100-person Flappy Bird game. Yeah, that's a thing.
I feel like this, there was something that came of, like, there was something like this before.
Yeah, I was racking my brain because I remembered something similar too, where there was like a multiplayer Flappy Bird.
God,
it was
maybe
not even
on
an iPhone. It was like on just the web or something like that.
No, there's this like weird. God, I'm trying to find it on my phone. Maybe I deleted it. But there was this weird service that was like spinning up that was like trying to get you to play like multiplayer games together, and it like had some weird like matchmaking thing. You remember what I'm talking about? It was like you loaded it, and it was like trying to get you like to play Fortnite multiplayer with friends based on some like weird overlay thing that never really worked right, but like you could play other multiplayer games inside of the app, and it was like this weird like streaming thing maybe.
Yeah,
and they had a multiplayer Flappy Bird that did this sort of like ghost thing.
Yeah, that sounds really familiar. I know what you're talking about.
It's like really,
but I can't remember the name of it for the life of me. But anyway, so this Flappy Royale is actually partly the work of Zach Gage, which I thought was kind of interesting. So he has contributed to this project. I'm not sure in what way, but yeah. So Mr. You know, one of our favorite any developers, but also, you know, something like Flappy Bird game, you wouldn't expect it to come from Zach Gage. But so this is an open beta. You can actually go to the website and play on iOS or Android for free right now. The beta version is just public.
Is it test flight or is it like a web app?
Yeah, it's test flight.
Okay.
And you can also play it in your web browser, which works just fine too. But anyway, so I downloaded the beta and played it, and it's super fun.
FlappyRoyale.io.
Yeah, I can totally see why they did this. I think my main criticism is that the hitboxes feel really off. I've died a lot of times where I'm like, I definitely didn't touch anything. So I think there's some work to go on there. But besides that, it's really fun to see how long you can outlast the other players. I mean, most people drop off real quick, but then, you know, you'll get to like seven or eight other people where you're all going strong. And it's just really fun. I don't think it's in real time in any way. I think it's probably just a lot of ghost data that they spool up to play each time you play, because I can't, games are just instant. And so I can't imagine.
Yeah, it's particularly
there's that many people playing this all at the same time or anything like
well,
that.
Well, with test flight, you're limited to 10,000 people. So like, there's no fucking way that like 10,000, there's that many people
get into game after game after game. So with no waiting, but fun idea. Actually, it's a good mashup that works. Like the battle royale thing is pretty played out, but it works well with Flappy Bird, and it's just a lot of fun. So I would check out the free beta go to flappyroyale.com.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I love the bus.
Yeah, you actually drop from a bus, like the battle bus. So super funny.
Yeah, this is amazing.
Let's see. FlappyRoyale.io is the official site. So you can find the beta links there and stuff, and you can play it yourself. And maybe you think it sucks and you'll delete it and no love lost, but I think it's pretty darn fun.
So. It wouldn't surprise me if like these are just bots for testing. Like this seems like something that would be pretty easy to do, like multiplayer.
Yeah.
I see what you mean about the hitboxes too. I've had a couple of bullshit deaths.
Yeah, a couple of cheap deaths. So if they tighten that up, I'd be more apt to play this, but it's kind of hard to like feel like you're doing well if you feel like you just die when you shouldn't have or whatever.
That's the purpose of a beta, baby.
Right, right. So that's anyway, cool. Flappy Royale, check out the free beta. Pretty darn fun.
Yeah, so it's flappyroyale.io. You just download it instantly.
Yeah.
No screwing around.
So next up is, this is a not quite in my wheelhouse, but I feel like it's noteworthy enough to mention.
Oh, do you why don't you do the ad copy before we get into the next
story? Are we at that point?
Yep.
Okay. Let me see if I can find it. All right, everybody, here we go. Void Tyrant is a roguelike deck building adventure with the hit or stand mechanics of blackjack. It's easy to pick up and learn, but challenging to master. Battle your way across the galaxy armed with only a deck of unique cards, a bit of strategy, and the powerful loot you find along the way. In this single-player adventure, you'll uncover hundreds of cards, fight or befriend aliens, and grow increasingly more powerful as you explore planetary dungeons in an attempt to find the Six Eyes of Kronos. Download it for free on the App Store today.
There you go.
Oh, yeah, that's the first time reading it. Pretty much nailed it.
Nailed it.
Very professional sounding commercial, if I do say so myself. We'll talk more about Void Tyrant in a few minutes because it's super awesome. And I'm, besides it being a sponsor, I want to talk about it because it's awesome. So we'll get to that. But so yeah, I thought this was worth mentioning. Pokemon Masters was announced during that Pokemon like direct, but not a direct, you know, video presentation a few weeks ago. And it's they're working on it with DNA, if I remember correctly. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the same people that worked with Nintendo on Super Mario Run and Pocket Camp, Animal Crossing Pocket Camp, whatever, are making this Pokemon Masters game. And so they had like a 8-minute presentation kind of divulging what everything is about. Basically, the gist of this game is that you can play from different Pokemon Masters from across all the different history of Pokemon games or whatever.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, built, you know, strictly for mobile or whatever. Should come out sometime this summer on iOS and Android. So we'll see what date that actually ends up being. But if you want to know more about what Pokemon Masters is going to be all about, you can check out this 8-minute-long video and get a look at it in action.
Hell yeah. I don't know. This seems cool, but I am sure it'll be free to play as hell.
Oh, I'm sure.
Right.
Which, I don't know, these days it's like, especially with games like this, it's like, how is that going to matter or not? You know what I mean? Like, a lot of these games that are built a certain way, it's like, if you were a $5 game, I'd be bored with you in an hour.
Yeah.
But you're a free-to-play game and I'll play you for a month or, you know, whatever. So
that's true. That we'll is see. True. Yeah, we'll see.
This was a pretty exciting news bit that I was not expecting. And we actually, last I checked, we were the first people to post this news. Hyper Light Drifter Special Edition is coming to iOS on July 25th, and it's up for pre-order right now for the low price of $5. I think that's a pre-order price. It's going to actually be like $7.99, $8.99, something like that. So it is a bit cheaper if you choose to pre-order. But yeah, Hyper Light Drifter. This was kickstarted back in 2015, 14, something like that, and it's kind of like the product of one guy, more or less. And it released on, it's kind of like a, you know, a sort of Legend of Zelda-ish action RPG type sort of game. It was one of those like indie darling sort of games.
Did you play this on the Switch?
No, I never have. I actually think I own it on the Switch and still never played it. But it's one of those games that's like, I've heard nothing but good things about it. Won a million awards when it came out. And it's sort of just beloved across the board. And so it coming to mobile is like pretty awesome. I mean, that's kind of a big deal. They said they've really nailed the touch controls. So it's really easy to play with touchscreen, but it should support MFI controllers too, if I am not mistaken. Yeah, support MFI controllers. And so, you know, theoretically, when iOS 13 comes out and Xbox and PlayStation controllers work, you can play with those, and it'll be just like you're playing on console. And it's pretty awesome, right? They also said they're going to be, for the first time, supporting 120 frames per second on the iPad Pro.
Oh, sick.
That. And then on all other devices, it's a solid 60 frames per second. And this will be the special edition version, which so far has been exclusive to the Switch. It released with like a different, an extra mode and some other extra stuff that was exclusive to the Nintendo Switch release last year. That's the version that's coming to iOS. So that's pretty cool too.
The Switch version is $16.99 on sale right now.
That this is $5. So I don't know. It's probably going to come down to people that want to play something like this on touchscreen or not. If you have an MFI controller, I feel like it's a no-brainer to get this for $5 as opposed to on other platforms. But yeah, this is an exciting thing. This is as exciting as like Dead Cells and stuff, which I think comes out on the same day.
Oh, speaking of Dead Cells, holy shit. So that game came out on the Switch, late last year, early this year, a while ago. So
yeah.
I don't remember when. And I got it because, you know, this Dead Cells is like the yet another quintessential example of like game that I've only ever heard people say good stuff about. I was like, mm-hmm. Oh man, that sounds something I'd really love, but I'm just like, I don't want to play on my PC kind of thing.
Right.
The Switch version came out and just like the frame rate made it, I wouldn't say unplayable, but certainly like not as much fun as it should be because like, you know, it's a permadeath roguelike. And when you're dying because like the frame rate is like slogging and like you can't like evade stuff properly because like you're missing timing based mechanics because like the you're getting 10 frames a second, like it just really sucked.
That's frustrating.
And so I was just looking for something to play on my Switch, and I was like, I wonder if they ever updated this. And I loaded it up. Mm-hmm. Sure enough, it was like, oh, downloading an update. And I was like, oh, it's really sick. Cool. Yeah, so it runs, I don't know if it's like a solid 60, but definitely is like way, 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 way better
than
it was before. Like ultra playable. I played the shit out of that this week or last weekend.
Oh, cool.
Really super fun game. I'm very cautiously optimistic with the mobile version. What that's going to be like because you do get into some hairy situations where like even with physical controls it's challenging but I guess you know as we mentioned when we talked about the story a few weeks ago like they are like really rebuilding the controls to make it work with touch.
Well, they created it's like an auto attack sort of mode where you'll automatically melee attack people that you get really close to or whatever when you get close enough to them. And so I'm curious to see how that works out because everybody said that was their favorite way to play it on the touchscreen. Mm-hmm. So it might just be that, you know, that alleviates a lot of those like other problems that you might run into and you can just kind of enjoy the story and doing the other kind of combat and stuff like that. But I'm with you. I'm very curious to see how it'll come out. And I actually just looked it up. It comes out the 17th. So the week before Hyper Light Drifter is Dead Cells. What a week. And then, you know, Monster Boy or Wonder Boy coming out a few weeks ago, like that was a big hit on Switch and Steam and stuff and consoles. And I feel like, man, mobile's just firing all cylinders with these premium ports.
For real.
It's very exciting. So yeah, happy to finally check out Hyper Light Drifter. I think I own it. I could probably check it out right now. We'll see if I ever get around to that. I definitely own Dead Cells and still haven't played that.
Yeah, so, Dead Cells is really, really, really good. Yeah,
me excited. Try it out now with the update news.
The update came out like months ago too. I wish that the Switch had like
just released a DLC update for it too, or a content update like this past couple days.
There's something new on it too. I wish there was a way like that's like one failing of the Switch UI is, and it's a lot similar problem with like the App Store now in that you know shit just downloads automatically like when you are charging your Switch and you're on Wi-Fi like it'll just download updates and
it doesn't tell you
if there is like some news feed that was like maybe there is I just like don't know about it but
I don't think there is
but yeah if it was like hey just FYI Dead Cells got updated like here's the two or three new things fix the shitty frame rate I would have been playing the show of this for quite a while so
no eShop is it's I mean basic is all heck and could be a lot better, but something like that would be really, really, you know, nice to know.
Yeah.
Cause that happens to me all the time where it's like, why is this, you know, so far up on my home screen? It's like, oh, it's cause it got an update. when it was, you know, asleep or whatever. So
yeah, I also, speaking of Switch stuff real quick, I got Graveyard Keeper on the Switch.
Oh yeah, that just came out on mobile too. So
really, really good. I'm only like maybe 2 hours into it or something like that. Because it just unlocked on the Switch on like Thursday morning, I think, or something like that, or maybe Wednesday night, I don't know. But so it's, I think you'll have a hard time playing it if you didn't play Stardew Valley or Harvest Moon or something like that, because it's surprising the amount of like assumed knowledge. It seems like the game kind of just like assumes that the player has. Which I because like I found myself like playing the tutorial with it, like really not explaining a lot of like what you're supposed to do, but like I know kind of like how Stardew Valley works, so like didn't need to explain that part.
But you couldn't help but think like somebody else would be real lost right now.
And there's definitely like I've gotten to parts in the tutorial where I've had to like look up what to do online, because like it really doesn't tell you a whole lot. Which, I mean, don't get me wrong, like I like games that have that kind of like allow you to get stuck and like don't handhold you the whole way, but it seems like, you know, before you even really learn how the core mechanics of the game works, the game should not be allowing you to like not know what to do next and stuff.
Yeah,
you know.
No, I think that's a fine line for sure. Well, that's good to know, I guess, going into it, that you might need to look some stuff up or don't get discouraged if you get stuck or whatever.
The other kind of dumb thing about, I mean, don't get me wrong, I really like it so far. The vibe is super cool, and I like that it's like a more complicated Stardew Valley, but one very odd design decision that they made is that the dialogue, like the text dialogue on screen, advances automatically. And like, I actually had to like start the tutorial over, because
I hate that.
You know, like, you're like, when you're playing a game that has like text-based dialogues, like any RPG or something, you like, they all work where you know, like press A or something like that to like advance the text, you know? So, I was playing the beginning of the tutorial. Like, I got a text message or something. I just put my Switch down without like pausing or anything. And like, you know, did whatever I needed to do on my phone. Then I picked up my Switch up again. I was like, what the fuck is happening? Like, this whole conversation is rolling.
I can't stand that. It should be an industry standard that when text needs to appear, if it's slowly scrolling in a text box, you can press once to instantly show all the text and then press once again to advance to the next text box or whatever. That's the way it should always work. And it's frustrating when it doesn't, because you think it should work that way. And sometimes you skip things altogether or, you know, whatever. And I hate games that make you wait for the scrolling text to fully appear before like, oh God. Yeah, this should be something that everybody puts together.
Yeah, I was like, surely this is in the options somewhere to like disable this, because it seems like really stupid, and it's not. Like, it's just how the game is, which I don't know. It's, you know, a really cool game other than a couple things that I think are a little weird. And I don't really know how much to hope that those things will get fixed, because it seems like this is just a one-to-one port of the PC version, which has been out for quite a while now. So, I don't know.
From what I've heard from other people that have been playing it or whatever, is that, like, it's got a lot of issues, and the guy that made the game's not super interested in fixing anything, but it's still a good game, so whatever. And if that's the case, that's the case, but...
I mean, like, for me, I think the best way to decide on whether or not you want Graveyard Keeper, I would definitely play Stardew Valley first. You haven't played Stardew Valley, but if you... played the shit out of Stardew Valley on like any platform that it's been on, and have been like debating starting a new farm, and we're just like, man, I don't want to start over. Graveyard Keeper. It's a cool, it's cool in that it scratches a lot of those same itches, but feels different enough that you're not just like starting over.
I can see that,
which is pretty cool. So, but yeah, give that a look. Hyper Light Drifter, I'm super jazzed for too. So that's pretty cool.
Can't wait for that. This was an interesting news story this week. So the Diablo-esque action RPG Titan Quest was finally updated with full screen support for the iPhone X. In case you didn't know, so Titan Quest released on PC in 2006, and you know, for all intents and purposes, it was like on par with like Diablo for people that didn't want to actually play Diablo or wanted like a new experience. It was very Diablo-like.
Right.
Instead of going through like dark dungeons and stuff like that, it's all kind of like overworld, whatever, Roman times or whatever you want to call it. But, you know, the same combat, kind of same loot gathering, all that sort of stuff. So it would scratch that similar itch for somebody that wanted more Diablo-like games because there wasn't a whole lot of.
Yeah, and particularly like with a premium game because it feels like the, right. like a kind of like dungeon crawling loot game is like primed to be able to sell you like gems and gold and stuff like that in a free to play yeah. setting. Like the last what was the Game Loft game, Dungeon Hunter or whatever, Dungeon Hunter yeah, 4 Dungeon or 5 Hunter, yeah. or whatever that was free to play. Yeah. Like that worked. That like wasn't terrible. Like it seemed like mm-hmm. it worked fine.
Yeah.
And that like you just spend more money if you wanted like way yeah. better loot way faster, but otherwise right. just like don't worry about it.
But those first few games like were legendary by people that wanted like a premium
oh, yeah.
you know loot crawler.
No, for sure.
So yeah, so Titan Quest came to mobile in 2013, I want to say, and was really an ambitious port. And more or less made the transition. It had some technical issues and stuff like that, but it was from .mu, who just do awesome work porting old games. And so it stuck around for a couple of years and got maybe some bug fix updates and stuff like that, but nothing really substantial. And it still had some outstanding issues or whatever. And it kind of remained that way for a few years. .mu kind of moved on to doing console stuff, and they don't really do much on mobile anymore.
Yeah.
Although they did just release Wonder Boy. But so anyway, earlier this year, or perhaps last year, now that I think about it, THQ Nordic, who it gets complicated. THQ Nordic owns the Titan Quest IP because when THQ went under, that's one of the things they picked up when they were like, you know, IP fire sale when THQ went under.
Interesting.
So Nordic Games, formerly Nordic Games, picked up THQ's IPs. They picked up Titan Quest. They later, a couple years later, renamed themselves THQ Nordic. And so last year, they took the reins, whether a contract was up or whatever, they took the reins over from .mu, who had previously published this game on the App Store, published it under their own name, THQ Nordic. Okay, that's fine, but republishing it under their name made it a brand new app, and so people that owned the original .mu version had to rebuy the game if they wanted to have like a currently available version, right?
Yeah.
You know, in the hopes of getting updates and stuff like that. Sadly, what ended up happening was the THQ Nordic published version, the second version, was identical with all the same bugs and all the stuff of the previous version that hadn't been touched in a couple years. So if you did rebuy it, it was like, well, what did I rebuy this for? The other one still worked, and this one doesn't have any updates, and it still has all the same bugs. And so that's kind of a raw deal for me. Making that matter worse, like I get that, you know, publishing can be sticky in the App Store and stuff like that. We've seen a lot of weird issues over the years. Making matters worse was that THQ Nordic then handed this off to Handy Games, who they bought a few years ago and is now their in-house developer for mobile stuff.
Right.
Handed this off to Handy Games, who then published it again under their name in the App Store, which prompted another separate app, basically meaning that if you owned the original and bought the original and then bought that second published version, well, that was gone now, and now you had to buy it a third time to have an active in the App Store version. And again, it was the exact identical version as before with all the same bugs, no widescreen support, blah, 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 blah. So just like a really ugly situation, which,
so
I don't know.
Which
I mean,
version
happens,
got this update?
What's that?
Which version got this update? All three or just
the
most
recent one?
Okay,
so this is the third version, the Handy Games published version. And to their credit, they got kind of stuck in a sticky situation themselves because, you know, it wasn't really their fault that they had to republish this game from their parent company or whatever, but also they inherited a lot of code they're unfamiliar with, a game mm-hmm. that was ported in ways they weren't familiar with. And so to even do any sort of work on this thing at all was like a really delicate process because you could do something that inadvertently breaks a million other things. And, you know, so what you guys do with Game Club, I'm sure, is very similar where
yeah,
you can
it's a nightmare.
Go back into somebody else's code. It's somebody else's house and mess with their things and not know how things are done right or whatever. You can really break a lot of things. So they, you know, now that it's under their name, they have been actively working on it. They did release an update that fixed a lot of bugs like several months ago, but still didn't have full screen support. And when asked if they were going to add that, they're like, you know, we're looking into it. But like I said, all the stuff I just said, it's hard to go back into another game's code and figure things out and whatever. But they did. And so they released a full screen iPhone 10, and I think I don't have an iPad Pro to check on, but I think it should be full screen on iPad too.
Yeah, that's cool.
Update for Titan Quest. And so if you never bought that second version and didn't buy the third version because it was basically the same game, but you were an original owner and liked this game, I think it's safe now to buy this one. I don't think it's going to change hands again. And it is now actively being updated, which it seems like there's going to be more to come too. Hopefully they release like the DLC content and stuff that people have been asking for a long time, but we'll see about that. But at the very least, this is pretty much one of your only options for a premium Diablo-like game on mobile. And to top it all off, it's on sale for $3 right now. So it's normally $7. So it's like, yeah, if you wanted to buy this and you've been waiting, or you were just irked you had to buy it again, like this lessens the sting that it's being updated and it's only $3. I say go for it. It's still really fun. I fired up this version to check out the update, and it's like got sucked into it for longer than I expected. You know, it's still a really cool game. It still has issues. Know that going in. But I mean, there's really nothing comparable on the App Store for a game like this. They're all free to play. And so, yeah.
Yeah.
I say go for it.
It wouldn't surprise me if the reason for, and I recently only kind of discovered this through like Game Club stuff, is that you can't transfer games or apps that use iCloud. So like if this game used iCloud and like they changed publishers, they had no choice but to re-upload it again.
Because that's weird.
Can't transfer stuff with iCloud. So
what a stupid limitation. But of course, Apple begs you to use iCloud in all their games. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That seems like a really stupid requirement. But you know, it's Apple, so whatever. But I'm not sure if this has iCloud or not. But I just know that
it probably does. Like, so that's the thing. Like, it could use something as simple as like an iCloud save game. Syncing or like iCloud leaderboard saving or like something very innocuous that just like uses enough iCloud to just have it enabled and you can't transfer it. So
man, that's annoying.
Yeah.
I guess the funny thing about this game is like it's such a robust game that you could pinch it. Potentially you bought it for $8 the first time, bought it for $8 the second time, bought it for $8 the third time. $24 is still like a cheap price for this game.
Yeah.
It's still like a pretty big bargain. For such a crazy game. So for $3, I feel like now is probably the time to pick it up if you've never owned it, or re-pick it up if you want like a more active version if you had the older ones or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a sucky situation going through the publisher changing and stuff. We've seen a lot of really weird things over the years. So
yeah, I mean, at least on the upside, at least the game's still being supported. You know, it could just have gone away. And
yeah, no, totally. That's what I assumed. So that's why the update was so surprising. So anyway, moving along, this was our sponsor this week, which was Armor Games for their game Void Tyrant. So this launched this week, and I had actually been playing the beta a little bit ahead of time. And, you know, it's really nice when the games that sponsor our podcast or our website or whatever are good. And so when you have to write about them, it's like you enjoy writing about it. It doesn't feel like you have to because it's a sponsored thing or whatever. I feel like we've been really lucky over the years to have a lot of really good games that we actually genuinely enjoy also be sponsors. And I think that's the case here with Void Tyrant. This is a game I saw at GDC last year and was like, oh my God, this is awesome. When is this coming out? And they're like, oh, you know, this summer. And then, of course, here we are a year plus later.
Right.
But it did finally release. It was largely the work of like one guy. And Armor Games, you know, helped out with a lot of stuff. I don't want to make it seem like they didn't have any involvement. But, so they've really just been polishing this thing for over a year, trying to get it right. And mechanically, it's just such an awesome mix. It's like kind of like a first-person dungeon crawler, I would say, where you battle against people that you come across, you know, while making your way through. The dungeon crawling aspect is really, I want to downplay it because it's a lot of like, sometimes you have a choice to go forward or left, but a lot of times it's just marching forward.
Yeah.
But the point is that you need to fight through a certain number of battles to beat each planet, and then you fight your way through a certain number of planets to get to the end and to fight the ultimate boss, and you can actually win this game. But it's also roguelike, so if you die, that's it. You start over from the beginning. There's some permanent upgrade type stuff and whatever, but more or less it's like, you're trying to get through to the end without dying at all. Otherwise, you got to start all over. But the basic gist of the game is you battle people with a deck of cards, and it's loosely based on blackjack. Although instead of trying to get to 21, as close to 21 without going over, you're trying to get as close to 12 without going over. And so you have less cards in your deck than a normal like deck of cards, but you also have less suits, or not really suits, but you know, numbers of cards. So it's numbers 1 through 6 in your deck of cards. And so you and your opponent will each take turns pulling a card, and you're trying to get as close to 12 as possible without going over. And then the way it works is like, say I get to 11 and say the opponent gets to 9. Well, then that 2 difference would be, I would do 2 attacks on him. And then your attacks can range, depending on what your weapons are and stuff like that. They can be, you know, stronger attacks or whatever. And they have a life bar you want to whittle down and defeat them. And when you defeat them, you get some loot and you move on to the next battle. That's kind of just the basics of the game.
You know what kind of sounds like is, you ever heard of Slay the Spire?
It's very similar in a lot of ways to Slay the Spire. A lot of people have been saying that. That it's got that same sort of loop.
I've been waiting for that to go on sale on the Switch.
Oh, really?
I have so many fucking games I haven't even like launched that I'm like not buying stuff at full price on the Switch.
I'm trying to be that way, but I know that I'm going to buy Virtua Racing today.
Oh yeah, so. I looked at that. I was like, oh damn.
$8. I feel like whatever, but I need to play that. But anyway, yeah, Void Tyrant. Yeah, the mixture is really good. Like, I mean. It's a lot of it is luck based, but a lot of it is strategy too, and just as normal blackjack would be. And if you're a card counter, I mean, you can card count in this game a lot easier. There's a lot less cards. There's a lot less, cool. You know, numbers of card. So you know, if that's your strategy, cool. But more than anything, the thing that spices it up is that you and your opponent each have like these decks. You have like a separate deck that's not just numbers. It's like specialty cards. And so you have kind of like a mana bar, and that can be refilled over, you know, by doing attacks to your opponent or whatever. But you can only use each special card uses a certain amount of mana. And so say you have 20 mana and there's like a specialty card that takes 15, then you're down to just 5, and you might not be able to use a couple of your other cards or whatever. So that's how they balance out using the specialty cards. But the specialty cards do things like you can add, you know, a certain number to your attack gauge that you're trying to get 12.
Yeah, that sounds cool as hell.
So say if you got to 11 and your opponent is at 11 and you're about to push, but you have this specialty card that'll add 1, then you can, boom, hit 12 and beat them. So, but then there's other ones that'll do like an immediate attack and do an immediate amount of damage, or leave a lasting effect on your opponent like dizziness or, you know, whatever. And so just like specialty cards like that that you can also utilize. And as you use them, other ones get shuffled in, and then you can collect new ones along your journey that kind of get put into your deck and will show up through battles and stuff like that. So I'm probably overcomplicating the explanation. It's really like, it's free to download. It's got premium unlock stuff. So if you want to get rid of ads and things like that, it's like $5. And but if not, you can play with ads, and it's really not that big a deal. It's super unobtrusive. But I feel like you'll play it and you'll play through a few rounds and you'll be like, holy crap, this is awesome, and get really hooked on it. Because that's what happened with me, where just after a few minutes, I was like, oh man, I want to play another battle. I want to battle another person. Oh, I want to beat this planet. Oh, I want to get as far as I can. Oh, I died. I'm going to start all over again. It was like a really, really kind of became an obsession for a few days there. So super fun game. Like it a lot. It's our sponsored game of the week, but I also highly recommend it just without anything to do with that. It's just a really good game. Free to try, play it as much as you like, and if you really like it a lot, you can throw $5 at it to get rid of free-to-play stuff that you don't like. So really, like, no downside whatsoever to this game. I feel like they tried really hard to just appeal to as many people as possible. So,
Slay the Spire, did some research on this. Launched on the Switch recently, but apparently has like a ton of bugs, and they are still saying they're working on updates for it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like a lot of people are.
I remember that it launched on the Switch actually, and I, but I haven't heard anything beyond that. So
maybe it'll go on sale when the bug fix launches.
You know, it's kind of a sad state of affairs that it's like almost never ever worth your while to buy a game on launch day. You wait because updates get released and it becomes a better game, or it gets more content, and it eventually goes on sale, as everything does. So you can get a better version cheaper if you're just willing to wait, which some games I'm not, but most games I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
So.
No. Yeah.
But it's also kind of sad that it's that way, you know?
No, I completely agree. But whatever.
So finally, tired from all this talking. Finally, last story I had to talk about this week is that there's a new Meteorfall game coming out. Meteorfall Journey was released a couple of years ago, and it's actually similar to Void Tyrant in a lot of ways. It's like one of those deck-based dungeon crawling games.
Yeah,
it's super fun. I think its coolest kind of hook is that it's super simplified. It's more like you battle against enemies, but then you have like a card option that's binary. It's either you play it or you don't, or it's a yes or a no. It's based a lot around Reigns or like Tinder. So one of the coolest things with it was so simple, but that was also in a lot of ways its drawback, because I feel like there wasn't a ton of strategy a lot of the time because things were so simplified. Well, Meteorfall Crummet's Tale is the new version, and it takes place in the same universe, same characters, same art style, and same basic concept, except for the big twist being that instead of having binary choice options, you actually have this grid-based, I think it's a 3x3, you know, grid or something like that, which changes the strategy a lot. So instead of things being binary, you actually have a lot of options and a lot of different ways you can go. And I would say, whereas the first Meteorfall was really designed as like a quick hit mobile type game, this feels more like a full blown sort of like card based battling game or whatever. So yeah, just that simple change really adds a lot to the experience. It appears. And so
I wonder if they're like gunning for like a Switch and PC release on this eventually, because like I thought the original Meteorfall was amazing, but like I don't think that they would ever get away with like launching that on other platforms.
That's kind of the thing. It feels like a mobile game, right? Like in a good way. In a good way. Like it's a really simplified and perfect to play for a few seconds or like a few minutes at a time, like whatever. Whereas this feels more robust. To answer that question, this is going to launch on Steam first.
Oh, well, there you go.
And in early access, and probably they estimate 6 to 12 months of it being in early access before they feel ready to call it finished. And then at that point, they will port it to iOS and Android and, you know, maybe Switch or something like that. So it's definitely a more robust Meteorfall than the original.
Yeah.
Cool. Which I think is good. But that's also the sad part, is that it's probably a long ways out.
Yeah.
I think the early access launch on Steam is going to be around November. And then so however long it takes in early access to get to where they want it to be to fully launch it, and then a mobile release after that. So
yeah, I've heard that that's like the way to go as far as like being able to have people play a game that you're like actively developing, because it's so easy to just push updates through Steam versus like even a test flight is kind of a hassle sometimes. So
yeah, no, I get it. I totally get it. It makes me sad that it's so far out, but at the same time, you know, I'm happy for them to do it right, and I got stuff to play in the meantime and whatever. But very exciting knowing there's a new Meteorfall on the horizon. And it's interesting. It's not just a sequel. It's really like wanting to take that concept and tweak it in a pretty significant way to almost make a new game.
Yeah, turn into something way bigger, it seems like.
Yeah, so that's really cool. So you can wishlist it on Steam right now, and then you'll get notified when it goes into early access if you want to play the Steam desktop version. Otherwise, next year sometime, I'm hoping it'll be out on mobile or whatever. We'll keep our eye on it and see what happens. So.
Yeah, that's cool.
Phew, man. That's all the stuff I got for today. Should we drive the bus off the freeway overpass, or what? How do we
drive the bus off the mountain cliff? I don't remember.
So, with that, I think we're going to wrap it up. Thank you so much again for listening to this episode of the Touch Arcade Show. As I said, at the top of the hour, we are sponsored this week by Armor Games and their new release, Void Tyrant. Talked about it at length a few minutes ago, so hopefully you check that out. It's free to download and try. Super fun game. Also, we are primarily supported through Patreon, so if you wouldn't mind checking out patreon.com/TouchArcade and consider throwing us even as little as $1 a month, which goes a long way towards keeping the podcast and the website going. Additionally, you can check out toucharcade.com/Amazon, do so your Amazon shopping through that link, and buy what you normally be buying through Amazon anyway, and we'll get a little kickback from it, and that can really add up and help us out a lot.
Oh yeah.
So please consider doing those things. Thank you again so much for listening, and we will be back again with another episode next week.
See ya.